Upgrade your comfort this season. Upgrade and save with the team at Legacy Heating and Air and Daikin. Right now, when you upgrade to select Daikin systems, you can receive up to $3,500 in rebates and incentives. The revolutionary Daikin Fit system is built to fit your space and your budget. And with flexible financing and payment plans to suit any budget, plus no payments or interest until 2026, an upgrade doesn't have to wait. This deal won't last long. Schedule your free in-home estimate today. Visit LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com to view exclusive offers and get qualified now.
Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the weekly Notre Dame football YouTube show that brings you everything you want to know about Notre Dame and some things you didn't even know you wanted to know. We'll bring that to you and answer your questions. We'll work those in during the course of our show. My name is Eric Hansen, just as the tag says below my chin. He's Tyler James over in the other box. Maybe we should look at each other sometimes. I guess I looked the wrong way. Anyways, we are going to have a lot of spinning forward from the blue-gold game. We're going to talk a little bit of NFL draft, a little bit of recruiting. And Tyler's going to tell you how to ask questions, how to ring bells, and how to do likes.
Yeah, make sure you're subscribed to our channel here on YouTube. Hit the bell for reminders of when we have content. We'll continue this Football Never Sleeps show into the summer. This is something we like to try to do weekly and continue to do so, as long as you folks keep showing up and supporting the show. So we'll keep doing that. Make sure you hit the like button to support the show as well. Send questions and comments through during the show, after the show. If you're with us live right now, make sure you've clicked through to YouTube to make sure you're able to ask questions or comment. The comment box will be on the right-hand side. If you're using a desktop version, and it should be below our talking heads if you're on a mobile device. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, if you're not a subscriber to our website, today, Monday, is the last day to take advantage of our latest deal. If you subscribe to InsideIndySports.com this week, this week ending today, you can buy 1 month and get three additional months for free. All you have to do is use promo code NDSpring24 when you sign up to get access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage and special access to us over on the Insider Lounge, where we spend a lot of our time and share our inside information first. We have a bunch of recruiting coverage from the weekend, including an intel piece I shared Sunday night based off the visitors who were here in the last week. There's a link to sign up for this deal in the video description below, so check that out. If you have not subscribed to InsideIndySports.com yet, that'll get you into the summer, into the start of preseason camp. So by then, hopefully you'll have a decision to make of whether or not you want to stick around with us. And we think by then we'll have proven to you that a subscription to Inside Indy Sports will be well worth your time.
That you will love us. And Tyler, just do the math for them. How much is that going to cost them to get 4 months?
$9.95, I believe, is the exact amount. But
okay, so under $10. So yes, less than the kind of coffee that Tyler James would go get. I get it out of my Keurig machine, so the subscription will cost you a little bit more than that.
I drink coffee with gold flakes in it only. So,
well, sounds good. Now that you've thrown me off, we are taking stock of Notre Dame football after the completion of all 15 spring practices, capped by the blue-gold game Saturday at Notre Dame Stadium. So in that game, the blue edged the gold 28-21 in the 93rd rendition of the blue-gold game. We don't say annual always because of the pandemic, wipe one out. The Irish finish off the semester in the next couple weeks. Then they get a short break in May to go home or to go do some internships and so forth. Then they return for summer school in early June. They'll have OTAs, player-led practices, and strength speed training with Director of Football Performance, Loen Lando. So our opening drive is the spring agenda. And Tyler, the first thing I'll throw at you is, what are the three objectives that you think the top three objectives, I know that there's a whole top 100 list, the top three objectives the Notre Dame coaching staff was able to accomplish this spring?
Yeah, well, thankfully it's only a top three because I don't want to be like Casey Kasem out here rattling off a bunch of them. But my top three, first one is establishing a linebacking crew capable of replacing J.D. Bertrand and Maris Leafau. I think Notre Dame did a good job of showing us what Drake Bowen, Jalen Snead, Jaden Osbury, Kingston Viliamu-Asa can all do to sort of help Jack Kaiser in revamping the linebacker group. I've been impressed with that group throughout spring. I think they played well. Kahanu Kia is someone I didn't include in that list, but he played certainly well in the blue-gold game. Preston Zinner has shown some flashes. I think it's an incredibly deep group of players at the linebacker group position, and so I think there's reasons to be optimistic about what those guys look like this fall. Second, I went with develop a wide receiver core that can make plays. I still think there's questions that need to be answered on actual game days on Saturdays this season, but I like what we saw from a number of the guys at the wide receiver group. It's another group that I think is deeper than it's been in a while. Jaden Greathouse, Chris Mitchell, Micah Gilbert showed some flashes this spring. Jaden Harrison was looking good before he got hurt. I think even Deion Colsey's looked better than he's looked throughout his career at times. Jaden Thomas is maybe one of the ones that had one of the more disappointing ones just because he got limited by a hamstring issue, but hopefully he's okay going into the season. So I think Notre Dame did a good job of showing and developing its talent at wide receiver that, and guys that can make plays, not just make catches, but go down the field and make some plays for them. And then third, I said developing depth at safety. I was impressed with Adon Schuler and Luke Talich this spring. They made strides with more opportunities. Both of them are now in position to challenge Rod Hurd and give Notre Dame a confidence in having a third safety ready to go, whether it's playing in some sort of rotation, being a third safety in third down packages. I think Notre Dame has done a good job of developing depth at that safety position, which is – been a pretty consistent problem for Notre Dame, right? I think Notre Dame has usually been, I think in recent years they've gotten better at safety play, but the depth isn't necessarily always there, and I think they're getting in a better spot there. I mean, if Notre Dame's depth was great, they wouldn't have had to go out and get Rod Hurd, but they felt that they needed to do that. But I think we saw some of the future at that position show itself this spring.
Yeah, I think if Notre Dame had known how good Luke Talich and Adon Schuler would have played this spring, they might have not have been so quick to go get Rod Hurd. And yet, I think he's a really good player and will probably start for Notre Dame. And he gives them some position flexibility in that if something happens to Jordan Clark, he could play the nickel and be involved there. So, and who knows? I mean, some of these – freshman coming in June, Bronte Johnson in particular, may surprise us as well. Mm-hmm. He didn't play a lot of safety last year out of necessity. He had to play quarterback for his team, and he did play some defense. But he's a really good-looking athlete, 6'3", about 180. And eventually he's probably going to be somebody that we're talking about on the show. So we don't check each other's papers before we go on the air, but I think we came pretty close in some of these. My number one, though, was a little bit different. I said installed a new offense and got relative comfort level with it, especially when tested against Notre Dame's defense. I mean, this isn't the Jared Parker, Tommy Reese, Brian Kelly offense, even though Mike Denbrock was with Brian Kelly the last couple of years. This is, I think, a different offense, and there was a lot of new terminology. And even though we didn't, you know, this wasn't about perfecting it, it was about really getting good enough at it so that they could start making those evolutions this summer when there weren't coaches around. And I think they were able to accomplish that. With my number two, it kind of touched on a couple of your areas, Tyler, and that's develop some key depth and some schematic tweaks on defense with the as young players rose to the occasion. So that's the safeties, that's the young linebackers. I mean, even on the edges, young guys like Boubacar Traore and Bryce Young give you some nice thoughts on what the defensive end positions can turn into. And then my number three was continue to develop top end speed at key positions, particularly wide receiver. We saw that over the course of time translate into some production as we saw a close scrimmage the previous Saturday and then the blue gold game this Saturday. I think you saw some of that. didn't see all the fast receivers. Jaden Harrison was hurt and the game didn't play, but those were the ones that stuck out to me. So then we'll flip it to what are the three objectives that will linger into the summer for Notre Dame coaching staff to accomplish, and then early in the August training camp.
All right, yeah. And after we get through these three objectives, let's get to questions because the queue is loading up.
Okay.
But in terms of things left to do for Notre Dame between now and the early part of training camp, I think number one is find more certainties on the offensive line. Really, as Notre Dame leaves spring here, in my opinion, the only two that I feel great about are Ashton Craig and Billy Shrouth. I still have questions about the offensive tackles. I don't feel bad about Notre Dame's other guard option, whether it's Pat Coogan or Rocco Spindler. I think that's going to work itself out, and Notre Dame will be fine there and probably better than fine. I think they have two good options there. But the tackle spots just remain question marks to me. I know Charles Jagusa is a work in progress, and he deserves patience, but he's also being asked to be Notre Dame's number one left tackle, and that's not really a job when you're competing for a playoff that patience should be given a lot too. So it's a difficult task for him. I'm not blaming him for the situation he's been put in, but he has to continue to come along. Tosh Baker needs to keep improving at the right tackle spot. Are those the guys that end up starting game one for Notre Dame? I don't know. Does Notre Dame find someone in the portal? That doesn't seem like something that would be easy to do. Are there guys that jump them that are currently on the roster? I still think there's a lot to iron out there as it relates to Notre Dame's offensive line. Number two, find a starting punter. That became a priority late in spring with Bryce McPherson's jump into the transfer portal. Marcus Freeman indicated after the Blue Gold game that they'll replace him with someone likely from the portal as well. So we'll see what comes of that, but obviously you got to do that. I don't know that Notre Dame would be terribly comfortable going into the season without someone in addition to who they have already. And then I was torn between the last two, so I kind of cheated and went with four. I went with find a fourth cornerback/backup nickel you can trust. We know that they hosted Rice cornerback Trayshon Devons for a reason. Because they need someone sort of to fill that Clarence Lewis role, sort of be a backup nickel and a fourth cornerback because someone can get hurt and you might need some extra bodies there. Now, maybe they don't need it to make an addition there. Maybe Micah Bell's improvement over the spring, which I thought he played well in the Blue Gold game.
Micah thought he played well, too. He was very demonstrative when somebody dropped a pass.
Yeah, and so maybe gives Notre Dame reason to not feel like they need to make an addition there. Can Chance Tucker be that? There are some options there, but that's something that I think Notre Dame has to figure out. And then the fourth one is keep at least three quarterbacks happy. I know we're going to continue to talk about if someone's going to leave, but I think you have to at least keep three happy, right? If two leave, then you're in a really bad spot. I don't think that will happen, but I wouldn't rule anything out. It's a crazy transfer portal world, especially at the quarterback position. So I think you need to make sure Notre Dame needs to make sure that it puts itself in the best position for 2025 with its backup quarterbacks, in addition to being ready for whatever needs to be done this season.
Those sound pretty good. For me, it's all about the quarterback as number one, determining who the number one quarterback is, and they won't be able to do that until Riley Leonard is fully healthy. Now, he was pretty close on Saturday, and his timeline that he feels like he's been given is that by maybe the middle of May, and so that's definitely in time for when they come back from summer school. And the team needs to see that Riley Leonard is the number one quarterback. What Steve Angeli did in the Sun Bowl lifted not only Steve Angeli's opinion of himself, but lifted the team's opinion of Steve's viability to be the number one quarterback. So quarterback is number one for me. Number two is offensive line. You know, you mentioned maybe a portal addition. Notre Dame really needs to examine that in the next few days. And certainly they can extend that search beyond when the window closes. But I think in fairness to the guys that are on your team, you'd like to let them know whether you're seriously shopping or not so that they can make that decision. And then, you know, they'll settle those two open positions, right tackle and left guard, fairly early in training camp. And then it's really about getting consistency and continuity. And then for me, number three is adding in the pieces that weren't available in the spring. So beyond Riley Leonard and Ben Morrison, obviously you had Jordan Faison playing lacrosse, and you had Gabe Rubio, who was out of school this semester for personal reasons, but is going to be back in June. And then you're going to add eight freshmen that'll be enrolling for the first time in June, and two more transfers that will be enrolling in June, and Bo Collins and Rod Hurd. And some of those guys will start, and some of those guys will be key rotational pieces. So it's working those guys in. So those were mine. So I know you want to get to questions, and so let's go do that.
All right. Yes, we have a bunch of them here. I think I have 10 with stars next to them. So let's start.
Did my questions have stars next to them?
No, yours come with the little bullets that you put next to them. I don't have to put any stars. Eric Swope asks, based on quarterback play in the spring game, which I attended, your thoughts toward the upcoming battle for starter, and should we be concerned regarding Leonard's injury?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Eric. Eric comments on Facebook a lot, very complimentary. So the check's in the mail, Eric. So for me, it's not just about the battle at the top of the depth chart. It's kind of the battle at the bottom of the depth chart. I think CJ Carr has really been impressive this spring, and particularly in the closed scrimmage we saw on April 13th, and then in the blue gold game itself, where you can make a little bit better apples to apples comparison with him. I don't know. Let's say all four stay at Notre Dame. I still think we're going to end up with Riley Leonard as number one. I think maybe there's a change in two through four at some point. I don't think Marcus Freeman and Gino Guidulli are in a big hurry to make that distinction, but I think CJ Carr is really pushing from the back end of it. And after talking to Riley Leonard and him explaining why there was a second surgery, I was much less concerned about the injury. Just to boil it down to layman's terms, he had a tightrope surgery which addressed the damaged ligaments from the original ankle injury being sacked by Howard Cross III way back in September of 2023. When they did that, they put a plate in, and the plate was either the wrong size or it just wasn't situated right, and it started to cause a stress fracture. So when they went in on March 22nd to address that, the ligaments had healed up perfectly. It was this new problem caused by the plate. They've been able to address that. There hasn't been any further problems with it. Riley has obeyed the orders of not doing too much. And you saw him in warmups and stuff. He's really moving around pretty good. So I am not particularly concerned. Anytime there was an injury that lingered that long, yeah, you'd kind of go, well. But for me, after he explained it, I felt a lot better about it.
Yeah, I don't have any expertise to say, like, you know, this is a bad sign. It doesn't feel good when it's stuff keeps happening. But there seems to be confidence in this not being like a recurring issue. So I guess you sort of just have to trust that. I don't know what else you can do about that other than just move forward with trying to get him ready as best you can. And if he can't go, you got to make sure you have someone else ready. So I think that's was the bonus of his setback this spring, is that everyone else behind him got even more opportunities to be prepared. Now it's a matter of making sure that all those guys stick around for next season and can be in position to help Notre Dame if needed. So I still think Riley Leonard's the starter unless he's injured. And I haven't seen or heard any reason to believe otherwise. All right, Brian Habermill asks, is it just me or does Riley Leonard really have that Tim Tebow exuberance and charm about him? I love the God bless he adds at the end of interviews.
He is, when you talk to him, it's very inviting. He acts like he's happy to see you.
Yeah.
That he wants you there. And I think he's that way around his teammates. And I think it's very genuine. You talk to people back in his hometown and so forth, and this is who he always has been. So I definitely think it's genuine and it's not just for the camera. Yes, I think he has that kind of charm. I don't know. I don't remember Tim Tebow's charm as well, but I like Tim Tebow.
Tim Tebow, at least from my recollection, gave off more tough guy to me than I think Riley Leonard does. Like, not that that's like a slight at Riley Leonard, because I think as a player, he has the respect of his teammates as being someone who's toughed it out through some injury issues. But Tim Tebow seems more like a preacher in some ways. Like, he's good in front of people around a podium. Riley feels welcoming, but he also feels a little bit uncomfortable. Like, he's more of an all shucks kind of guy than like, hey, I'm Riley Leonard, the senior. Or the leader, like he doesn't give off like superstar like I think Tim Tebow did or even Sam Hartman did.
So you're saying that Tim Tebow would have told that Duke professor to give him extra time on the assignment and not ask him for it.
Exactly. And maybe brought a Bible verse for a reason why he deserved that extra time. But yeah, I mean, he's been a blast to cover so far. And obviously it's always easier to cover someone in spring than it is during football season if there's a loss, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of easier times that they're dealing with now than they could be later in the season. So but yeah, I think he's everything that we've seen from him seems pretty genuine, and I think people will respond warmly to that. All right, Bob Bolt asked, how about Emil Wagner at left tackle with competition for the right tackle spot?
I think Emil could play either side. I think they're really happy with the trajectory they think Charles Jaggers is going to be on, considering, again, he overcame a pretty serious knee reconstructive surgery and was able to start in the Sun Bowl. I think they just like his length and his athleticism there. Not that Emil isn't tall and it doesn't have length, but he doesn't have the body mass yet of Jagasa. But Emil works at both sides. I mean, we saw him throughout the spring with the number two right tackle and sometimes at the number three left tackle. But I think at least the coaching staff likes Emil on the right and Charles on the left.
Yeah, I think if Emil was a more likely left tackle starter, I think he would have already been given that opportunity. So even though he sort of fits maybe more of the mold of a left tackle and has some of the traits you would tend to associate with that, I don't know that his play has necessarily aligned with that, at least in the eyes of the coaching staff. So I wouldn't rule it out. I, at this point, I'm not willing to rule anything out when it comes to Notre Dame's tackles. So I think just keep having them all work, and may the best men win, and get whoever those guys are out on the field. Mike DeVoy, while we're talking about the offensive tackles, asks, how does Joe Rudolph get these offensive tackles ready to play by the fall?
Repetition. It's his job to develop these guys, and none of them have extensive starting experience. I mean, Charles Jaggers hadn't even played 10 snaps before he started in the Sun Bowl. And Tosh Baker has a handful of snaps, but it's not very many. And one or two of them were in 2021. And Emil Wagner has never started. And he's been kind of an undersized guy. I mean, that's his job as the coach, to get these guys ready. And I think they are improving. It's just maybe not as apparent when you're going against a defense as good as Notre Dame's in spring football. I mean, that's one of the top five defenses in the country, and I think will be again this year. So, you know, let's see what they look like in August. I mean, they're in the oven. If we take them out and taste them right now, they're not, it's not, that's terrible. Okay, if we poke them with a toothpick right now, it's not going to be a pretty sight. So, yeah, they need more time in the oven.
Well, nothing you just described was a pretty sight, but we'll keep it moving. The offensive tackles need to – I think they're pretty decent run blockers. Like, I don't have huge complaints about Charles Jagusa or Tosh Baker as run blockers and guys that can be physical. I think they need to be way better in foot speed and working in their pass sets more. That's where they're going to be challenged around the edge. That's what we talked about after the game. Eric was like, yeah, the offensive line isn't a cohesive unit in a blue gold game because you're not working next to the guys you're used to. But if you're getting beat around the edge, that's no one else's fault but yours. Like, you got a guy to block and he's getting around you. So I think you have to keep working with those guys to keep improving there. Hope that some of the lessons that they've been taught going against Notre Dame's defensive ends stick. And you got to be ready from the first game because word out of College Station is that Texas A&M has a really good looking defensive end group, and they're going to be able to get after the quarterback. So unless that's hyperbole, Notre Dame's going to be tested on the edge in their season opener. And so whoever lines up at offensive tackles needs to be prepared for that. And so that's why it's so important for those guys to keep improving this summer because they have lots of work left to do.
Right. And Mike, one thing, just getting into the weeds with it a little bit more for you. And Marcus didn't say this in relationship to the offensive line, but we've heard this all spring about what's going to happen in the summer. And he did make a reference to this. One of the things that he really likes about Lauren Lando is his ability to work with position groups with specific drills and exercises and workouts for them to get faster or work on quickness and strength and different things, and even tailoring it to individuals. And I think that's where the offensive linemen could really benefit from this approach, is this summer when they're spending a lot of time with Lauren and getting specific drills that are going to help them with their pass blocking.
Another O-line question from Len. I think we've already touched on it, but I at least wanted to quickly address it. Interior offensive linemen outplayed the tackles. Do you agree? Great job, guys, with your coverage.
Thank you. I did. I mean, I thought the interior was better. And I think in general in spring when we've seen them in different drills, although they're outside sometimes when we can't watch them, but we've seen a lot of them recently. And I do think the interior guys are ahead of the perimeter guys, as Tyler suggested.
Yeah. Let's see. Jeff Stevens asked, the fan / subscriber reaction has been very measured following the blue gold game, in my opinion, compared to previous years. Are you surprised?
I guess I'm unaware of the measured nature of it. I've seen a lot of people that are really excited, so I'm not sure if that lines up with measured. So maybe I'll let you answer this one, Tyler.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I mean, I think when you see quarterbacks playing well, it makes you a little bit more happy. I don't know exactly what you would expect. Like, if, I mean, there are people that are worried about the offensive tackles. I think that's a fair worry. I think there's still people that aren't really sure what the quarterback situation is going to be. I think some people that didn't want Notre Dame to bring in Riley Leonard still are like, well, why did we bring in Riley Leonard? So I think a lot of people are still stuck in the same sort of perspectives that they had regardless going into spring. I think there's a lot of reasons to be positive and confident about where this program is heading, and what it can do this season. So maybe that's just maybe calmed some of the, edges of the fan base that like to go overboard either in maybe either direction. So, I guess I would sort of agree that I don't know that I've seen anything like really a lot of people that are extreme doomsday or a lot of people that are extreme sunshine pumping, I think is a message board terminology. I think it's usually sunshine pumping and bedwetting are the two famous phrases that people like to use on the board. But I just think that there's both reasons to be confident and some reasons to have some questions about this team, and no one's getting too far ahead of themselves. Maybe because some guys are out, like Riley Leonard's out, Benjamin Morrison's out. So you're not even really seeing everything that this team can be. So you can't really get too invested in what it was this spring. And maybe we've done a good job to say, hey, spring is spring. Like, don't get too worked up about it. Like, we're going to cover it like crazy, but this could all be moot in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, spring is about impressions, not conclusions. And I think that people going in had high expectations that Mike Denbrock would be a good, really good addition, and that Al Golden's return was a really good thing, and that Marcus would be a better head coach, and that there'd be depth and talent on this and more speed at wide receiver. And it kind of lived up to that. So maybe that's why, Jeff, that you're getting the vibe that you're getting. But or maybe you just need to have a beer.
No, I think he's doing all right. He's happy that people aren't freaking out. So I think he's okay about it. Jeff Steven asked, did either of you see that amazing performance coming from Kanukia? What role do you see him playing this fall?
You know, Tyler interviewed him earlier this spring, I believe, right? Weren't you at Kahanu's? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
We didn't know what we're going to get from Kahanu because he had been away from football for 2 years and really didn't even do workouts, wasn't even allowed to do workouts that were of any substance until the very tail end of his mission when he was back on Oahu. He was in North Carolina. I mean, it was very little. And yet, what I've come to expect from the kids from Hawaii is always over-delivering. You know, under-promise and over-deliver, and every one of them has been like that. And I know that Max Bolla was excited about Kahanu before spring started, not to the point he thought he would contribute this year, but the fact that at some point he, you know, the football would come back to him and he was glad he was on the team. But he really impressed me on Saturday. There's no question about it. And I know his family was here, so that was good timing for him.
Yeah, I think he has shown that he's been quick to return to form in terms of being a football player. I'm not sure how involved in the defense he'll be able to be in terms of all the competition that's going on at a talented group there. He'll definitely be a contributor on special teams. It's good to see the flashes of what he's doing right now. And I think Notre Dame just needs to figure out a role to sort of harness his athleticism and his size and figure out what's best for him moving forward. But yeah, I wouldn't say that I saw that coming because we just hadn't seen much of him. But it was nice to see him show that he's maybe farther ahead in getting back to where you'd want him to be than maybe I thought after talking to him earlier this spring.
And for people that didn't follow the game, he had a game-high 12 tackles with 2 tackles for loss.
All right. Eric Swopes asks another question for each of you. Which players surprised you the most and could seriously challenge a known starter on both offense and defense?
Surprise me in the blue-gold game or surprise me in the spring? I'm going to go with surprise me in the spring.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to do it.
I'm going to go with Adon Schuler on defense. I thought he really rose to the occasion, and he, as Tyler mentioned a little bit earlier, I think he's going to have some kind of role on the team. On offense, I think it was K.K. Smith during the spring, just because I had so little expectations that he could even think about getting in the rotation, and he still may not. Mm-hmm. They're only going to go 6, maybe 7 deep, and you start doing the math, and he could be left out. But I did see a really nice burst of speed from him, and it wasn't just in the blue-gold game. I thought he had a nice spring, and he's put himself in a relevant position in terms of competing for playing time.
Yeah, I think on offense, maybe I would go with Micah Gilbert. He was someone that I'd heard some good things about. I'd seen him as a high schooler. I just wasn't sure that he would be able to sort of adapt as quickly as he has. Now, is he going to be the starting boundary receiver game one? Probably not. But can he work his way into the rotation? I think he's put himself in position to now. All of a sudden, Notre Dame's boundary receiver has a few different options when you talk about Jaden Thomas, Deion Colsey, Bo Collins coming in the summer, and Micah Gilbert. So it's a crowded spot for him to be able to do that at. But I think he really put himself in position to challenge there, especially like in context of Jaden Thomas dealing with hamstring issues again. And so maybe there's a bigger need there than originally thought. So that would be someone to go with there. Adon Shuler is a really good answer for the defense. And there was something I was sort of like wondering aloud going into the spring was if he could prove himself at safety, would Notre Dame maybe consider playing Rod Hurd at nickel, where he played a lot during his career? Obviously, they have Jordan Clark at nickel. So I think that's not necessarily needed the way Jordan Clark played this spring. But it does give Notre Dame some more flexibility and options there. Like I said, it could be a third safety role for Adon Shuler in special packages. I don't think Jason Anya is going to like unseat Riley Mills as a starter. But Jason Anya is going to play a lot, it seems like. I don't know how you keep him off the field unless he's just taking advantage of different competition and his growth doesn't translate to the fall. It didn't necessarily translate to the fall last year in the way that we thought it would. The way he played, I think, was very impressive. And I think one of the more impressive springs probably across the board for anyone at Notre Dame. All right, more questions. Redimax, making me hungry. With hindsight, given the stress and locker room dynamics of Dante Moore's annual re-recruitment, would you say Notre Dame actually benefited by missing out and landing Kenny Minchie instead?
Dante Moore's awfully good. I mean, I don't know if he would have been as transfer happy had he landed at Notre Dame instead of where he's been and where he's going, UCLA first and so forth. I think Notre Dame can't complain about where it is with its quarterbacks. I think 1-4, I can't remember Notre Dame's quarterbacks looking like this since I've been covering Notre Dame, which, you know, either directly or indirectly since 1988. But what they need to make sure that they are is really good at number one now. They're good 1-4. But they need to be really good at number one. I don't know that Dante Moore would have changed that calculus, that we would be talking about Dante Moore starting instead of Riley Leonard. It's just hard to project.
Yeah, I mean, if Dante Moore comes to Notre Dame and sits as a freshman behind Sam Hartman and stays, maybe I think he probably only would have stayed if Notre Dame didn't get Riley Leonard, right? Given that he has already transferred out of UCLA when he was given some opportunities there, that circumstance makes you wonder if what would happen there. Yeah, it's hard to predict because one quarterback, like it's referred to in recruiting very often as quarterback dominoes, because it impacts not only your roster but other rosters. Like, would Notre Dame still have ended up with CJ Carr? I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of – it's a very big, like, butterfly effect almost of what would have happened if Dante Moore ended up committed to Notre Dame's class and staying with that commitment. I think things have worked out fine for Notre Dame since then. So I don't think it's something that Notre Dame is sweating, but also Dante Moore could still turn out to be quite the quarterback during his college career, given that he's only going into his sophomore season. Chris W. asks, what would you guess for the fall quarterback depth chart?
I would say Leonard 1, Angeli 2, and I would probably flip eventually Carr and Minshew if they all stay.
Yeah, if they all stay, I think it's just going to stay the same. I think it's Leonard, Angeli, Minshew, Carr. I've spoken before about, like, if everyone's still here, what's the benefit of CJ Carr jumping ahead of someone on the depth chart? Because doesn't that only just encourage someone to potentially transfer out? So unless you have to be say, okay, we're fine with Kenny Minshew leaving. If you're going to put CJ Carr ahead of him, I think that's just the way you have to think about it. So I think there could be some gamesmanship there. Maybe I think it's different. Like, how do you split the practice reps? And then how, if it came to a spot where it's like, okay, Riley Leonard's out, Steve Angeli's hurt, who are we playing next? I wouldn't be surprised if CJ Carr was the quarterback put in there, but I think that would be a decision that Notre Dame would wait to make until it had to make that decision. So I know that seems difficult, and I think it is difficult to handle as a coach. But I think that's sort of what Notre Dame has to do. Even though Gino Gadulli, the quarterback's coach, has talked about, we don't really talk about a depth chart, because I think at Notre Dame, you're a quarterback that should know where you stand in the pecking order, and you can see what you're doing in practice and what other guys are doing, because you should have a strong enough presence and knowledge of the game to know who's playing better than the others.
And we can tell that neither of my sons watch the show, because one of them just tried to call me.
Well, my mom tried to have me call her right as the show started too. So we got a lot of family members that are really paying attention to the Football Never Sleep schedule. Carberry Q asks, so your best educated guess is, who do you guys think may transfer out in this spring opening?
I don't like to name individuals and speculate. I think position-wise, if there's no new additions other than the punter and possibly the cornerback, you know, you might see a defensive lineman leave. You may see an offensive lineman leave. You might see a wide receiver leave. I think those are kind of the positions where there's a lot of numbers and some guys that have stalled on the depth chart.
Yeah, those three, and then quarterback. I think that's the other position where no one would be surprised if someone left from the quarterback room. So I think those are the four positions. Yeah, that's sort of
definitely not long snappers.
A protocol that we prefer to it seems unfair to speculate unless we know for sure someone is leaving, and then we'll report that they're leaving rather than sort of guess about it, because that's not necessarily fair to assume that someone's going to do that and let them come to their own decision on what they want to do. All right, we have a recruiting question, so we can leave that to the end, but we finally reached the end of all of our questions, Eric.
Okay, we're going to scroll ahead. I'm doing a story on the top 24 players for 2024, an exercise that became very difficult because of the team's depth and because of so many ascending players. So we're going to list our top 10s, and I guarantee you they won't be the same. It was very, very difficult to do this, and that story is going to run tomorrow morning. So, Tyler, who was your top 10?
All right. This was difficult to do. I mean, I could probably go back and forth on the order of some of these. There were guys that were hard to leave out of this list, but I went 1, Benjamin Morrison, 2, Xavier Watts, 3, Mitchell Evans, 4, Howard Cross III, 5, Riley Leonard, 6, Jack Kaiser, 7, Riley Mills, 8, Jaden Greathouse, 9, Jeremiah Love, and 10, Ashton Craig.
Wow. I'm stunned.
Is it the exact same 10 as yours? No.
Pretty close.
Really?
1, Ben Morrison, 2, Xavier Watts, 3, Howard Cross,
okay,
4, Riley Leonard, 5, Riley Mills, 6, Mitchell Evans, 7, Jack Kaiser, 8, Jeremiah Love, 9, Jaden Greathouse, and 10, Billy Shrouth.
So we had one different player. We had Ashton Craig and Billy Shrouth changed out.
That I don't know if that should make me feel better about us or worse about us, because we didn't discuss it at all.
No.
And doing the 24 was difficult because I left off some starters. That's how good Notre Dame's depth is. And believe me, when we get to August, that list is going to change. There's going to be people that move up. There's going to be people that move down. And quite honestly, I mean, it's hard to evaluate Rod Heard and Bo Collins.
Right.
The Riley Leonard was the one where I felt like I was going way out on a limb that you would match me. And we both kind of had the same idea. You know, if Notre Dame, I mean, it's not only that I think Riley Leonard will be that guy, he has to be that guy, or at least somebody in that quarterback room needs to be a top five player.
Yeah,
if you're going to be a playoff team, you need your quarterback to be a top five player.
Yeah, the expectation is for him to be that player. Maybe we're being too confident about that, but that's sort of what it is. And I think the situation that he's being put into is one that is attractive outside of the offensive tackle position, which is a very important part of playing quarterback. So that's something Notre Dame will have to get worked out in order for Riley Leonard to reach his potential in Notre Dame's offense. But I wouldn't have guessed that we had nine of the same 10.
In the same spots.
Yeah, if you would have maybe guessed who you included that I didn't include, I would have guessed Billy Shrouth. And I had him at basically 11. He was in my next group. I had Billy Shrouth, Chris Mitchell, RJ Oben, and Christian Gray were guys that I considered putting in the top 10 but decided not to.
I didn't even have Oben in my top 24. That's how good I think this team is. And I just didn't see enough of him in the spring game. And in last week's scrimmage, he really started to move the needle with me.
Yeah.
And so if there was another week, he could have moved way up.
Yeah. I think
it reminds me of Javonte Jean-Baptiste spring.
Yeah.
Where I didn't have him in the top 15 last spring either.
Yeah.
And then by mid-season, he was top five.
I think that definitely played in my head. It's like, okay, RJ Oben had a better career at Duke than Javonte Jean-Baptiste had at Ohio State.
Right.
So it's like maybe it's too much of the benefit of the doubt that Al Washington will get RJ Oben where he wants him to be going into the season. But I do think he will be an important part of Notre Dame's defense, even though I think Notre Dame has some good options behind him as well. So Notre Dame's defensive line specifically has a lot of depth that I think really can elevate the expectations for Notre Dame going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, and when you start talking about all those young linebackers and stuff, I mean, it was just in the depth at running back and the depth at wide receiver, it's hard to get all the stars. Like, I didn't have Jordan Clark in the top 24, and it's like, what are you doing? But it's ran out of numbers.
Yeah.
And I did, in my top 24, I included three of the four quarterbacks. I have Angeli in there, and I also have Carr.
Well, that you made life a lot harder on yourself by doing that. That's how you end up with fewer starters in there when you take three.
I did, but I think, you know, it is interesting. I've watched some podcasts and read some other things, and people outside Notre Dame, there's a buzz about CJ Carr outside of the program right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, again, it's some of that may be because of who he's related to, but if you watch the spring game, I know a lot of the people on my Facebook page are pretty excited about CJ Carr. So, okay, our next section is the top five players who will join or rejoin the roster who could have the most impact. And we're eliminating two people, Riley Leonard, who missed most of spring, and Ben Morrison. So in the pool are players who were either injured, who are June arriving transfers or freshmen, or people like Gabe Rubio and Jordan Faison who were not in spring football for full time for one reason or another.
Yeah. So I think this is a reflection. I mean, one, of how many freshmen are already here, but two, like, I don't think Notre Dame needs a lot of freshmen to make impact. So I didn't even include any freshmen.
I did not either.
My number one guy is Rod Heard, because I think he's the one that has the best chance to be a starter. Okay. Jordan Faison was number two. I have him followed by 3 Jaden Thomas and 4 Bo Collins. I think all those guys have chances to impact Notre Dame's passing game. I don't necessarily know exactly how it's all going to play out. I guess I feel confident about Jordan Faison because he played so well last year at the end of the season. I think he'll continue to improve, even though he has spent time playing lacrosse. I don't think that's necessarily going to be detrimental to his growth as a football player. So I like what he can do, and I think it's a little bit different than some of the other guys on the roster. Mm-hmm. And so I kept him higher than Jaden Thomas and Bo Collins. And then at number 5, I had Gabriel Rubio, and that's farther down the list than I would have anticipated having him maybe 2 or 3 months ago. But I think Notre Dame's interior defensive linemen have continued to develop to a point where even if Gabriel Rubio didn't come back, like, I think Notre Dame would be okay. I still think you're better off having him come back, but I think that especially Jason Onyeka, Donovan Heinisch is someone that Al Washington sings praises of any chance he gets. So I think there's some good options there for Notre Dame and the interior defensive line, regardless of Gabriel Rubio's status.
Okay, I'm going to count mine down from 5 to 1. At number 5, I went with Bo Collins. I think, you know, you look at his numbers at Clemson, and it was like 38 catches for 510 yards and 3 touchdowns. You go, that's... And then you look and say, wow, that's better than anybody on Notre Dame having catches and receiving yards. So,
right.
Jordan Faison, I went with at number 4. And he's tearing it up in lacrosse. I mean, he definitely is helping both programs. Number 3, I went with Gabe Rubio. Number 2, Rod Heard II has to be really good if he's better than Adon Schuler and Luke Talich, and I would imagine he is. And then number 1, I went with somebody that you didn't name, and maybe because he's injured, you didn't think of him, and that's Mitchell Evans. I think
Evans
would be the most impactful of the guys that didn't play this spring.
Yeah, that's just an oversight on my part, because I had Evans at 3 on my top 10 players going into the fall. So, Evans would definitely be in there. He'd probably be number 1, too, so you move everyone down there. I included Jaden Thomas because he missed so much time. Like, he was out there doing some things, but he wasn't really doing a lot when we were there. So it doesn't sound like he was able to get the most as much out of spring as you would like, but as long as that keeps him healthy going into the season, I think that's certainly a fine trade-off. But you wonder what his status will be in terms of being able to keep those hamstring issues away from him.
With Jaden, I mean, normally I would have probably had him on my list and high, but given how good the other boundary receivers are, if he didn't come back, I don't think it would be as – I still think he's one of Notre Dame's best receivers. In fact, I on my list of 24, he's behind only Greathouse in terms of wide receivers.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have all these other options, too, lessens the, oh, my gosh, he's injured again kind of vibe.
Right. Yeah, like instrumental to Notre Dame when he was out of the lineup.
I made a show that could take us for 3 hours. So there's some of these things we're going to have to go till next week. But do we want to hit some questions before maybe we get into a couple of the other topics?
We can do that. Brian Habermel asks, is RJ Oben more like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, or is he built more like Sheldon Day or Isaac Rochelle?
I mean, JJB was, I think, a little bit longer in the arms and a little bit taller. Mm-hmm. But Oben, I think, is way closer to Isaac Rochelle than Sheldon Day. Sheldon was about 6'2"-ish, 6'1"-ish. I think Isaac was a good 6'3", 6'4"-ish. He's thick, though. He's got a really thick build. I mean, he looks like he could be, if NFL doesn't work out for him, he looks like he could be a WWE guy. Wrestler.
Yeah, I would say Oben is more like Jean-Baptiste than those other guys. Whereas, like, I think Sheldon Day and Isaac Rochelle could play defensive tackle at times where I don't.
They did play tackle a lot, right. But they were in a 34, so he was a 34 and 2.
Right. So And I don't think RJ Oben would necessarily do that. I actually looked it up while you were talking. Oben was listed at 6'4", 260 last year, and that's what Javonte Jean-Baptiste was listed at too, although okay. Jean-Baptiste was 6'4.5". I think Javonte's a little bit taller just from not seeing them stand next to each other, but having stood next to them myself. And I think probably has longer arms. That's Javonte Jean-Baptiste is sort of a very impressive looking defensive end because of that. Similar to Jean-Baptiste, Oben needs to make those improvements to be better against the run than just a pass rusher. And that's what, Notre Dame plans to do with him and hopes will pan out for the fall. And then the recruiting question we got was from Frank Serra. He said he passed on a portal question this week. My question is, do you think Notre Dame will get any 2025 commitments in the next several weeks? Thanks, guys.
Well, that's a Tyler question.
And I'll chime in. Frank was the one who, I believe it was Frank, asked us about the Pittsburgh defensive end. I think it was Deion Hayes who went into the portal last week, and he's already committed, I believe, to Colorado. So that answers Frank's question about where that guy was headed. It wasn't Notre Dame. In terms of Notre Dame getting commitments in the next several weeks, I would lean towards – well, I mean, I guess it depends how many you want to stretch several out to. I don't know that
Notre Dame's – June, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that Notre Dame's going to get any before its official visits. I think they could. I wouldn't rule that out. But I don't have any indication that anyone's, itching to commit in the 2025 class. I think it would probably be more likely that Notre Dame would get a 2026 commitment in that time than a 2025 commitment. I think the 2025 guys would be probably around early June when they start getting on campus for official visits. So I think that's what's likely to happen. But we'll see as these guys get back and sort of think about what they want to do in terms of, is it worth getting back out for official visits or do I already know what I want to do? I think there could be some guys that decide, you know what, let me grab this spot in Notre Dame's class, especially with some of the positions. There's sort of some jockeying for who can get the last spots remaining at certain positions. So there could be some pressure to commit before official visits come up. And we'll see how that plays out for Notre Dame. All right. I think that is all for the questions.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes to get in three long topics. So we are going to move the Jack and Kathy Shields Family Hall, the new facility. We're going to move that to next week. We'll go more in depth with recruiting next week. We'll review the draft instead of previewing the draft. We'll do that next week. And we're going to finish up, if we have any more questions, with Frank Serra's favorite topic, the portal. I'm just teasing Frank. We do appreciate you. Also, Bryce McPherson opted to enter the portal before the Blue Gold game last week, and unfortunately after our show aired. Ironically, punts were not part of the Blue Gold game. Marcus Freeman said after the BGG that they'd search the portal for a replacement. If they do, Notre Dame would move back to 89 scholarships. They don't have to be to the NCAA max of 85 until the first day of fall semester classes, which is August 27th. And we talked about obvious position groups where those might come from. Trayshawn Devones, you say it, Tyler. I talked to him and I just called him Trayshawn.
I think it's Devones, but I don't know that for sure.
I should text him and get the pronunciation to have him call me. A cornerback transfer, he visited last week. The visit went very well. He's very interested in Notre Dame. I don't know that he ends up here. His role would be a guy fighting for a spot in the rotation. He knows that. He's not guaranteed being a starter. Do you think this is a needed addition, Tyler?
Yeah, as I talked earlier, if Notre Dame isn't comfortable with Micah Bell or Chance Tucker as the fourth cornerback and or a backup nickelback option, I think it makes sense. And Notre Dame has even offered some preferred walk-on types as cornerbacks that could maybe fill that role that have played. I think at least one is an Ivy League player. Their names are escaping me currently, but there are a couple guys that Notre Dame's been looking at there. So I think it wouldn't be bad to have someone with experience added as a depth piece there, but that can sort of be a hard needle to thread, because if you're transferring, you probably want to play too. So we'll see how that works out for Notre Dame and Devones, if that's where he ends up, or he finds a place where he feels like he's maybe an assured starter.
Right. He visited UTEP right after Notre Dame. He had that visit already set up and had promised them. He's supposed to visit Houston this week, setting one up to Tulane, but his phone is ringing off the hook. He's getting SEC schools now, Big Ten schools. He was in the portal since February, but it wasn't really until the portal reopened and everybody could kind of see what was in it from the spring rush, where they said, yeah, wait a second, this Rice guy's worth going after. So,
well, and teams get a better idea of what they have on the roster and what their needs are too.
Right. The last thing then, Tyler, is having watched spring practice, do you feel there's any position group where Notre Dame, besides punter and besides possibly adding Trayshawn, where they should look at a portal addition?
Yeah, I think this is the 1,000,000th time I've said this, and it's offensive tackle. My opinion has not changed. It doesn't mean that I think it 100% will happen or that there is an answer out there for Notre Dame. But if Notre Dame can find one, I think it would make sense to bring one in. And this would be a guy that you think can start for you. Now, that trims the list in terms of guys that you can find in the transfer portal that are worthy of starting at offensive tackle at Notre Dame. That's honestly my biggest concern about Notre Dame going into the season right now is the offensive tackle position.
And do you feel good enough about what Eli Raridan did, what Cooper Flanagan, Jack Larson, Davis Sherwood did, that if Notre Dame doesn't get both Bauman and Mitchell back right at the beginning of the season, or either one of them for the whole season, do you feel good enough about what Notre Dame has at tight end?
I do. The fact that you kept Eli Raridan healthy throughout the spring was very important to that, because I think Notre Dame would be in a position where maybe at the beginning of the season there's one more injury, then you're like, oh man, we're really thin here. But maybe tight end isn't as important either. I mean, I think Mike Denbrock is obviously capable of calling an offense that isn't tight end dependent, or at least more than one tight end dependent, with what he did at LSU the last couple of years. So, I do like what I saw from like Cooper Flanagan and even Jack Larson. I think those guys are capable, and Davis Sherwood is experienced too. So I think that you can get along fine. If you're like trying to figure out, okay, we can only add one more player, I feel like it would be hard for me to be convinced that tight end needed to be that spot.
Okay. Do we want to hit the question portal one more time?
Yeah, we got one question here from Mike DeVoy. I saw Dylan Devison, the correct name, listed as a running back. Then he disappeared on the depth chart. Is he still with the team?
In Mike's defense, the very first time Marcus addressed us about he called him Devin.
Yeah.
So, and then I think I called him that subsequently on a podcast. So we've confused Mike. He is listed as a running back now. He still is with the team. He was a quarterback and a holder for a while. I guess he could still be a backup holder, but yeah, he is playing running back now.
Yeah. So, not needed at quarterback. There's not reps for a fifth quarterback. Now maybe they move him back if the transfer portal takes some quarterbacks off Notre Dame's roster, but
well, Anthony Rezac will be coming in June.
Correct. Yeah. They have another option there as well. So getting him, other ways to help the team, as a scout team player has been the priority. And yeah, I think he's default number one holder for now until Notre Dame can find a punter. And if they can feel comfortable with that person becoming the holder. All right, Eric, that's all the questions.
Well, I appreciate everybody at least pretending to laugh at our jokes, putting up with us and asking us questions. And if you're not a subscriber, I mean, $9.95 for 4 months of coverage, I think we can hook you with that. But if we don't, we appreciate you trying. And it's a great deal. And so please give us a try. And Tyler, I'll let you finish up.
Yeah, make sure you take advantage. If you're interested, take advantage of that before midnight tonight, Monday, because that is when the deal has expired. We told you about it last week. And it has continued throughout the week until today.
Said, you're talking to your kid that he has to midnight to clean his room. We told you about this last week.
Well, I don't want to hear any sob stories that you didn't know it was coming, because we told everyone about it. It's been plastered as the banner at the top of the page on the homepage of InsideIndieSports.com. As an exclusive. Yeah, no one else is offering subscriptions to our site, so it's an exclusive. But if anyone else wants to offer subscriptions and wants to pay us from their site, we'll take them up on it. But the promo code's NDSpring24. There's a link in the description of this video. You can take care of it. Like I said, it's in the banner on our website. You should be able to find that. And we'll be back next Monday for Football Never Sleeps. We'll probably have some NFL draft discussion to talk about. We can talk more about the football facility that was announced this past Saturday. We're going to be back quickly with a podcast. We're recording podcasts on Tuesday this week. So look for that in your podcast feeds. And I think that about does it for us. Appreciate everyone tuning in, subscribing, liking the show, commenting. Good crowd tonight. Lots of questions. And I know that means we don't necessarily get to everything that we prepared to talk about, but I'd rather talk about what you guys want to hear from us than spend time talking to the stuff that I make Eric prepare for us. All right. Well, everyone have a great week, and we will see you soon.